One of the great treasures of Western liberal thought is the idea of equality before the law. Yet group identity has been deemed more important than individuality. Nationally known talk radio host Larry Elder says that the new double standard with regard to race and so-called group rights is ugly and shameful. He spoke at a Cato Benefactor Summit.
I'm often asked how it is I got into talk radio, because I never even thought about getting in talk radio, and I now host a show which is thankfully the number one rated afternoon drive time show in Los Angeles. And what happened is I was working in Cleveland, as Ed mentioned. I practiced law, and then I started a business, which I ran for about 15, 16 years. And one of the reasons I'm so adamant about my belief in this country and belief in economic freedom is because of how successful that business was. But in any event, I never even thought about doing a radio. And I did write a lot of op-ed pieces for newspapers, and every now and then one would get published. And I wrote a piece where I talked about limited government and the importance of eliminating things like affirmative action. And it ticked off a local talk show host in Cleveland. And I never listened to talk radio, didn't know who he was. His boss called me and asked me if I would agree to appear on the show. And I said, sure, I'll go on. And so I went on for 1 hour. And I was just called all sorts of names, and Uncle Tom this, and you're an idiot, and I'm yelling at the callers, and the callers are yelling at me, and I drive back to my office. I remember saying to myself, what a god-awful waste of time that was. It reminded me of arguing with my little brother Dennis. And everybody's got a little brother Dennis, you know what I'm talking about. And I get a phone call from this guy's boss, and he says, you were fantastic. I said, I was? Oh, God, you were funny. I said, I was, and you took a position and you defended it well. I said, I did. Have you ever thought about doing talk radio? And I said no. And he said, well, this guy's going on vacation next week. Why don't you sit in for him? And I said, well, it's very flattering, but I don't think so. He said, I don't think you realize how potent you could be in this medium. Would you just please consider it? I said, I'm sorry, flattering. I don't think so. I don't like it. Take one night. Think about it. Come back. I'll call you tomorrow. Let me know what you think. I was married at the time. I went home. I said, Cindy, they want me to do this thing. She said, what do you think? I said, I think of talk radio as stupid, shallow, and glib. She said, it is. You'd be good at it. Gives you some idea what happened to that marriage. I have been called all sorts of names, and in the first chapter, which is probably the most controversial chapter, Ed, blacks are more racist than whites, I talk about some of the names that I have been called, and I just give a very abbreviated list in the book. Oreo, as in brown on the outside, white on the inside. Uncle Tom, bootlicking Uncle Tom, which is kind of like a higher grade Uncle Tom. Straight up Uncle Tom, which is really the Academy Award. Judas, boy, bug-eyed, foot shuffling, sugarcane Negro, handkerchief head. A Trojan horse, anti-black, pro-white, Remus, Sambo Tom, the Antichrist, and one that really pissed me off, Republican. A man can only take so much. I argue that blacks are more racist than whites, not to say that the majority of blacks are racist, but if we are talking about white racism being a major force in America, I think we have to look at black racism. In California, there was this fight over Proposition 209 to abolish race and gender-based affirmative action. The guy that led the charge was Ward Connerly, a black man who is a contractor in the Bay Area, and he was attacked. I mean, he was viciously attacked, especially by black leaders and black political figures, one of whom was State Senator Diane Watson. Ward Connerly happens to be married to a white woman. And Diane Watson says, I know why you support the abolition of affirmative action. You're married to a white woman. You have no ethnic pride. You want to be white. That's why you support this measure. Did she apologize? No. In fact, when reporters asked her about it, she said, that's right, I said it. I don't take it back. She is now, by the way, the ambassador to Micronesia, care of Bill Clinton. Charles Rangel, the New York congressman, said of the GOP 1994 Congress, quote, they don't say spick or nigger anymore. They just say let's cut taxes, end of quote. To this day, he's not apologized nor felt any reason to. Al Gore's campaign manager, Donna Brazile, referred to the Republican Party as the party of the white boys. You recall that? No apology demanded, none given. I debated Julianne Malveaux, who's, in my opinion, one of the more irresponsible writers. She writes a column for USA Today. She happens to be an economist. And I was debating her on a national televised program. And I said, you know what the problem here is? This almost pathological search for the great white bigot. To which he responded, you're wrong, Larry Elder. There is no great white bigot. There are about 200 million little white ones. That's a quote. I gave a speech before the Anti-Defamation League once, and they commissioned a poll and found out, good news, anti-Semitism in America is at an all-time low. In the American anti-Semitic rate, according to the ADL commission poll, stood at about 9%, again, a historical low. However, in the black community, it was four times higher than the overall rate. These are the kinds of things that I point out in the book. During the Proposition 209 fight, a local college wanted to host a debate. To debate the pro-affirmative action side, they hired and paid a guy named Joe Hicks, who now heads the L.A. Civil Rights Commission. To debate the anti-affirmative action, they hired David Duke. When I read that they were going to invite David Duke, I called them and I offered myself to debate the anti-affirmative action side, and they decided David Duke would be a much more effective person, because after all, anybody who's opposed to affirmative action is David Duke-like in their mentality. These are the kinds of things that I'm talking about. They statements that are routinely made, routinely not checked. But the overall theme on the part of somebody like Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Maxine Waters, is that if you can't get a loan at a bank, it's obviously because a racist lender refused to give you the money. If you live in an area where there's a lot of violence and a lot of crime and you can't get insurance, obviously you are a victim of racist redlining. If your kid doesn't do well on the SAT, well, the problem is not your kid and your kid's refusal to work harder and your refusal to put more pressure on the kid to work harder and a crappy school the kid goes to. It's because racist examiners designed a culturally biased test. What does this say? It says that people like that are willing to accept the worst possible motive in the minds and hearts of white people, that white people really get up in the morning and want to oppress black people. Now, that is something that we call in the black community racial profiling, and it is as offensive as when done to black people.